AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, if you live in the southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, or northern Delaware, you can hear the broadcast live on the radio simply by going to 860 AM. And I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in on their radio, no matter where they are. They can tune in from the internet from anywhere in the world or anywhere in the USA simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Well, this has been a really unbelievable week. We've had so many things in the news. The weather was unbelievable all over the country. But of course, as people are speaking up with one another, good things are starting to happen. I first would like to thank our panel members, Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, National Small Business Advocate, Rich Loges, principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, is here, and I'm Michael Blihash, always proud to be with you. And as you know, our friend and supporter, Curtis Ellis, is always sending out his weekly updates, and he will be joining us again in the very near future. Well, this past few weeks, I had the opportunity to go out and attend several events. And I want to tell you something, it's been a very good experience. No matter what the age of the person, if they're retired, they have sons and daughters that are in the workforce, they have grandchildren that are in colleges, they all have something to say. And today, as we have our open forum, I'm going to ask Larkin and Rich, who are here with us today, and Mark will be joining us hopefully later. He's out greeting some buses today. People really want peace and prosperity for America and for the American people. And they all tell me that they're not feeling that love from national leaders and definitely not from many national outlets in the media that continue to just divide the people, conquer them, try to herd them into categories, race, color, creed, background, amount of money that you make. It's ridiculous. Promoting negativity is of no benefit to the American people. And my question is, does negative actions really promote jobs, which is what we're all about on this broadcast, or are they dividing people to the point that it's a waste of our time, our life, and human capital? I have to say, I was at an event on last Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon. Boy, the people were great. And I want to tell you something. Our signal goes far and wide. And the amount of people that stop to let me know that they tune in on Wednesday and Saturdays, thank you guys for tuning in. And thank you all for spreading the word. I want to just say this before I go to Larkin and Mark. Our supporters are people and their families that get up and go to work every day. They're concerned about their own well-being and the well-being of their families. They believe in a job and they want a job. They don't get that example from the national leadership who are pushing people that government is their best friend. Government is their mother and father. Government is their provider. Another thing which people have been telling me in my travels, and I thank people for their suggestions, and I say that I will use them on air. Colleges, in many cases, are placing our young people in debt, big debt, because the boys and girls are graduating with beautiful titles on their graduation certificates, but when they go out for a job, there's not that many jobs in most cases in the categories that they're graduating with. So they studied for 4 years, and the debt they generated is going to last for many, many years. So I was talking with some good souls on Sunday, and I said, I wonder if the young people boycotted colleges for a year or two, and those colleges weren't getting those hot bodies in the seats. I wonder how they would react. How would they pay all these fancy salaries and be pushing the people into attending all these fundraisers and all, when the people see that the amount of people rushing to that institution are not there? People agreed. They said, yes, I think the colleges should be competing for young people. And I think the colleges should also be offering degrees to our young people in not only art and math and sciences, but also in technology, the trades, and everything else. With that, I'm going to turn to Dr. Rich Logis. How are you doing? And what do you think? What's happening today as we have open forum?
Hi, Michael. Larkin, good morning. Hopefully Mark can make it. And to our listeners, good morning to everybody. Well, Michael, I think that we're living in historic times. History can be good and bad. And, I wish for a lot of things that you just said. I actually do. But there is a, big picture speaking, Michael, there is a need for I'm not sure exactly how to word this, so I'm just going to just kind of talking out loud here. You know, basic fundamental tenets of our country have been totally rejected and shredded. And in one case, the most alarming of all, which is the rejection by one political side over the peaceful transfer of power. And I actually have, Michael, a new article coming out this week. And the article, I'd like to get Larkin's take on this, because this is my take. So Gallup, which is generally a pretty good polling company, poll schmoles, I've always been skeptical of polls, especially after the 2016 election, which most polls, even right-leaning media like Fox, those polls all predicted that Empress, Secretary Hillary Clinton, would win a 57-state electoral college landslide. Remember that, Michael? Remember when all those polls showed that Hillary Clinton was going to win 57 states? Well, Gallup has a new poll out this week talking about how younger voters are becoming increasingly they're increasingly favoring socialism and collectivism over capitalism. And the article that I've written, Michael, that's going to be published this week, is that when I saw that poll, the first thing I thought was, that is such a major GOP failure, that we have so many people, so many young people, who have soured on capitalism, which by no means is a perfect system, but to paraphrase Churchill, it's the worst system of commerce except for all the others, capitalism. And we have all these young people who have watched many Republicans throughout the years, Michael, nary blink an eye as Jobs went overseas. We've watched them help people. A lot of Republicans, Michael, they think that President Obama was the one who doubled the debt. Now, look, President Obama was president for almost 3,000 days. I doubt that a single day of his presidency he thought about how to spend less of my and your money. However, he had a lot of Republican congresses who spent a lot of money. So as I sit here and I think, is it any wonder, Michael, that younger people think, you know what? Maybe socialism isn't so bad compared to capitalism. I think the Democratic Socialists, Larkin, are getting it wrong, though. They're selling free health care and free college. I think they should be selling free Maseratis instead. If you look at Maseratis, they cost way less than most colleges do. If you look at how much is spent on Maseratis annually, it's dwarfed by the health care costs, Michael. And I don't know about you guys, but I think it's time for a United Nations resolution that calls for Maseratis as a human right. What do you think?
That's right. I love it. Larkin, what do you think?
Well, Mr. Loges, good morning. And what a wonderful opening to the show. But before I get into that, because I do want to make a comment, before I get into that, I wanted to tell our listeners and our panelists that today is a very, very special day in the life of one of our very old friends, Patrice Banks of Girls Auto Clinic. She is going to be in Time magazine in the next few weeks. She currently has a 15 and a 30-second commercial running on television. I saw it the other day on Bravo. I've seen it on every major network. For Lean Cuisine, she has partnered with Lean Cuisine, and she does a commercial for them. It's absolutely fantastic. And today is the first day of our Indiegogo run at raising money to move forward with Girls Auto Clinic. We all enjoyed Patrice a couple times that she's been with us, and she really is a moving force for not only women, but for employment and for education, the kind of education that makes women very employable. And if you've ever been to her garage in Philadelphia, her car clinic, as I call it, in Philadelphia, you'd see all three bays headed up by women who are hammering away at engines and making them work. They're, quite frankly, the only people who have worked on my car, even here from Florida. I wait until I do a trip to Philadelphia, and I allow Susan, the head mechanic, be the only one to touch my car, and she makes it home. So if you all could go to www.indiegogo, which is I-N-D-I-E, Indiegogo, G-O-G-O.com, you can find the Girls Auto Clinic in there, and you can buy into a wonderful, wonderful project that she has going, which is obviously a bold mission to educate and empower women through their cars, not only to not be afraid of them, but to be willing to work on them, to sell them, to work in the management of the automobile industry. It's just a wonderful project, and I think both you, Michael, you and Rich remember Patrice.
Absolutely. In fact, Lark and I did get an email today bringing attention to that, and I wish best wishes to her for a great run. I mean, she's kept her nose to the grindstone, and part of that is because of your, you know, working with her. And that's a very important thing that we have to do. She shows us anything is possible if we keep at it. Focus and consistency. So, Patrice, yeah. Best wishes, congratulations, and as we say in Polish, stolat, 100 years.
I'm not sure that she's taught me more than I've taught her. It's been quite the relationship, but I've enjoyed every minute of it. And you're right. She is one of the smartest, quickest on her feet people that I've ever met, and I've really enjoyed working with her. So let's hope that this event of raising money for the project of bringing the Girls Auto Clinic to your town works.
So this is an idea to sort of franchise things, right?
Well, it's not franchise. I don't know that there's been any decision as to how that structure would be. Patrice's main goal is to just get an auto clinic in Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and Denver and Washington. And it may take different arrangements. The only thing I can tell you for sure is that she doesn't want to run 15 of them. So she's looking very hard for partners that could be partners, as we all know, in the small business world, in so many different affectations. There's just so many different ways you can do it. General partnerships, the franchises, there's a million different ways that can be done.
But very good.
Her main interest now is to get it out and get it rolling.
Well, she has the ability to do it. No one can, you know, defend her in any way but in a positive way, because she's really kept her, you know, focus on what she wanted to do. And that's exactly, Larkin, what many of the people have to do now in order to be in the business climate. They have to do exactly what Patrice has done. Get a subject they want to be involved with, get a business they want to be involved with, and move forward.
So to get back to Rich, who to me has brought up one of the most serious problems that we face, and that is the future of this country economically, structurally, the way our government looks. We're in a very bizarre place right now. I read the same article you did, Rich, or maybe a different one, that said that, I don't quote me, but it was some egregious number, like somewhere between 47 and 51% of the millennials believe that
socialists.
Socialism, thank you. Good Lord. Socialism is, they think, is a better form of government.
I'm going to ask you and Rich, why do you feel that people born and raised in America feel that way, that socialism is a better way? Is it because...
I think there are two reasons. And I think Rich brought up one of them, and that is college really worth it? Is college really worth the experience, what you learn, and when you put your feet on the ground, you know, from the graduation ceremony, are you really ready to go to work?
No. The answer is no, Larkin.
When I graduated from college, I walked into the Gulf Oil was my first job, Gulf Oil Corporation, and I walked in there with a pair of gray flannels and a blue blazer and a striped tie and a blue. I thought I was dressed to the nines, and the head of the district walked out of his office, shook my hand, and said, "Son, the next time I see you, I'm hoping that your pants match your coat." That was his way of telling me that we wear suits around here. And I had to go out and borrow money from my dad and go buy a couple suits, and just hope that he didn't realize I was wearing just two suits and, you know, rotating them daily. But is college worth it? The Gulf Oil told me, steered me right in the kitchen and said, "You couldn't possibly be further away from being ready to go to work for this corporation, but give us 6 months and we'll have you thinking properly." And they did. They sent me to Philadelphia. They sent me all over the place to work and get a feel for, you know, what made Gulf Oil work. But we have a more serious problem here. I think it's the expectations of the graduates. Graduates are way, way, way off. I think the colleges are creating an undue influence on these guys, so that when they come out of there, of course they're going to like socialism because they've been taught by 32, you know, radical liberals that think capitalism ought to go down the road. And this is universal in every college environment. It's just, you know, where they love to have liberals come and speak, but when somebody mentions Ben Shapiro, you know, we don't want him on our campus. They don't listen to both sides. Colleges are doing a wretched job at educating our children. They're overcharging and not giving them proper services. But I think the other one that Rich hasn't mentioned is the destruction of the middle class. It's rapidly disappearing. You're either a big have or a have not. The middle class has really been assaulted by America. And you know, one of the fundamental issues in that destruction is the fact that all the middle-class jobs are over in China, are over in, you know, have left our shores. But I think those are two really, really radical issues. And then every millennial sitting there picking up the newspaper going, well, the Democrats don't like the Republicans and the Republicans don't have like the Democrats. And all I read and see on television is a dysfunctioning government, a dysfunctional government. Why should we continue with this? They can't even, you know, decide tax rates. I mean, they argue about everything.
Right.
So, Rich, you brought up a great subject.
You know, Larkin, you're right, and it's very sad. But, you know, as I talk to people, they say, I had so many radical professors in school who really promoted me to do this and look this way and act this way and shun this idea. You know, many of these professors are well paid, number one, so they're living the easy life themselves. So they don't want that to go away. So they are indoctrinating the young people, and that should not be their job. They should be paid to do a job to teach the subjects that are requested and needed by the industries in America. Why should someone go to a school, pay for 4 years of liberal arts, and come out and not know what they want to do, what they want to be? I'm really angry, too, because a lot of the young people that I talk to, especially you go out to the job fairs, they were never, you know, encouraged to make their own resume in an environment where they critique each other in a classroom, in a high school, in a middle school. Where have you been in the last 2 years? Add that to your resume. Add that to your... Larkin, every one of us had to do that. But the young people today know why is there no resume? Is it because the teachers don't want you to see how poorly you've been going up the ladder? Something strange about that. I would want to see what you've done, what your capabilities are. Where are you going today? Where are you going tomorrow? We're not going anywhere.
So let me ask you this, and I'll give you a hint as we work towards the answer. How much does the average, this is the average, so half of them make less and half of them make more. How much does the average president of a college or university in this country make? And this is a 2014 number. How much do you think they make?
I would like to know. I don't know, Larkin, but I know you do. Tell us.
$531,000 a
year.
Mm-hmm. And now let's talk about Amy Guttman, who is the president of the OSO elite University of Pennsylvania. How much is she making? You want to guess, Rich?
Million?
I'll take a guess.
Million. Yeah, you're going to guess, Henry?
I was going to guess like 800.
Amy Guttman makes $3.5 million a year to run the University of Pennsylvania.
Jeez.
What a business.
It's a racket. It became a racket. I would say that $3.5 million should be cut and divided amongst 10 or 12 people. And let those people start fighting to get that $500,000 job.
Can I be one of those 12 people?
Yeah, Henry wants to be one of those 12 people. Me too. I could talk you the ears off a brass monkey. Maybe I should go over there. I'd teach them how to, you know, start putting in subjects that are going to mean something. Rich, you at least went to school. You were a journalism, background. You are doing what you learned. Many of the young people, creative arts and all this stuff. What exactly does that mean? When you go to a job fair, who's asking, can we have all the people with creative arts in this line over here?
Excuse me, Michael. I actually, you know, I graduated college in 2000. I'm still paying for it today, yes. But the thing, I because of my personal experience, I had a overwhelmingly positive personal and academic experience in college, which is why when I see today what's occurred and what continues to occur at colleges and universities across the country, it's beyond saddening. And you want to know something that's actually, you got to give Democrats credit for this, Michael, what I'm about to say. You go and ask people on the street why college is so expensive, most of them will tell you it's because It's because funding was cut. It's actually the opposite. What happened was tons and billions of dollars got flooded into the college and university market. A lot of that money was taxes, public money. So as money got into the market, what happens to prices? They go up, inflation. So they used all of these public monies, billions of dollars, to create colleges and universities that overwhelmingly produce Che Guevara and Vladimir Lenin t-shirt-wearing idol worshippers who drink $10 vanilla green tea chai lattes with organic, raw, unfiltered goat milk while tearing down a statue of Frank Rizzo and Robert E. Lee. What's the legacy?
But it's
there?
It's the truth, Rich.
What a brilliant plan. Take tax monies to produce factories all across the country of little Marxists and socialists who, by the way, Michael, projected demographics show are going to be the overwhelmingly majority voting bloc in the next 30 years. So for all of my fellow America First, Republican, conservative, right-leaning, independent friends, you think stuff's bad now. What are we going to do, Mike? What is the plan of the national GOP? Would Ronna McDaniel Romney, Willard's niece, I call him Willard, because I don't go by Mitt, I call him Willard. Does Willard's niece, who seems to do a pretty good job, in fairness, of running the RNC, Ronna McDaniel, does she have any idea what to say about that Gallup poll? Does the RNC have any idea about the inevitable demographic changes coming up in the United States? The president, yes, he was the game changer, Michael. But the president is going to be forcibly removed from office January 20th, 2025 by the 22nd Amendment. His administration is finite. What happens then? Then what? And this is one of the major differences, Michael, between the establishment Democrats and the establishment Republican Party. The Democrats are always playing the long game. They're always thinking about the future. Always.
Rich, that's a good statement. But where was the leadership in the last 30 or even 40 years in the Democrat Party, in the Republican Party, and everybody else? When something's not correct, something is hurting the people. It's up to the American people. It's up to the leadership to speak up. It's because it's the appropriate thing to do. Speaking up is what the doctor orders. We've created a crisis in America because it's our doing. We sat back and let the jobs leave. We sat back and let the college courses be charged triple of what they should be charged. We charged nobody for going to the trade schools. We didn't do anything. We cut everything out. We knocked down everything. And now to build it up, it's going to take a long, long time. However, there are businesses in this country right now who are saying, let's get the trades back in the schools. Let me speak to my congressman and my senator and tell them what kind of people we're going to need in the future. And if our tax dollars are going to that, we want to have some say in it. And guess what? There's no response. No response from the top elected officials. There was just, I send it out to everybody, and hopefully we will have a guest on our program to talk about what Congressman Glenn Thompson of Pennsylvania put in. He put in that new piece of legislation, which is going to push more for the trades and industrial arts in all of our schools, and the president signed it into law. That was passed by the Congress and the Senate, and it's going to help our schools to revive. Why didn't that happen 30 years ago?
Michael, can I make a point? Larkin, I want to address a point you said about the middle class. Okay. Without trying to be partisan here, Michael. Okay, we're in a binary political system. You guys know my calling card has always been that I look at these two parties as a flip side of the coin. The president notwithstanding, the president is the exception. because the president ran as a Republican, but he really ran as an independent. That's why the establishment GOP cannot stand President Trump, because he is showing how ineffective the GOP has been for so many years. So when you look at the Democrats, Michael, Warkin's point about the middle class, when you look at the Dem Party, the vast majority of affluent people in America are Democrats. That's a fact. They support them. They vote them. Democrats have given over 100,000 times more money than the NRA has in the last 20 years. That's a fact that the Federal Election Commission will prove to you, for anyone who wants to check that out. And I can give you all the data if you'd like. Okay? So wealthy Democrats influence things a lot more than the NRA does. And then you've got the flip side of the affluent, right, who are those who are impoverished and poor, who are found, Michael, in large part near where Larkin lives, and where actually no matter where you live in America, you've got big inner cities, even in so-called red states, that have voted for Democrats for tens of thousands of consecutive days. Alabama, red state, right? Birmingham, big Dem city, where you are right there, Michael, in Philadelphia, right? I've mentioned the numbers to you guys. Near where I am here in Florida, it doesn't matter. So those people who have lacked economic mobility and opportunity, whose entire livelihood is based on government dependency, well, they're not lifetime NRA members who are right-wing gun-toting conservatives, right? They're Dems. So then the middle class was always the market that the Republican Party fancied itself as being the party of. Bull. So what happened is that same Republican Party that saw fit to spend a lot of money, that still to this day doesn't even remotely have any good ideas about how to resolve health care. A lot of those young people have watched their parents work their two jobs, have struggled, have had big government, high taxes, health care that costs. They could have had a Maserati. See, instead of health care, Michael, if those parents of the socialist millennials had bought a Maserati, those millennials would say, I love capitalism. I love it. I mean, who goes into a bar? What college grad goes into a bar and says, hey, baby, I got health care? Oh, PPO? No, HMO. Whoa, really? Yeah. See, instead of healthcare, let's focus on Maseratis, Michael. Then you walk into a bar and say, hey, I got a Maserati outside. Oh, really? Let's take a ride. Come on. That's what the socialist millennials have watched, a lot of them, Michael. They've watched their parents, middle-class families, good people, workers, hard workers, right? Americana, pay your taxes, stay out of trouble, all those things. And they watched them struggle because the Republican Party has aided and abetted the big government industrial complex. And you know who benefits the most, Michael, from the big government industrial complex? The wealthy. And who do the wealthy predominantly vote and support? Democrats. Is it any wonder that the wealthy love big government? Because they benefit from it. Then the president runs for office. You know what he says? Both parties suck, actually. They've both been charging you too much. And people said, that's true. I think I'll vote for him. Oh, but look what he did in 1974. I don't really care. And now, Michael, the game is up. And the Dems and the establishment GOP, they've both overplayed their hand. It's why the Dems right now are like wild animals in the corner, you know, in the jungle. And they're trying to get out of the corner because everybody thought that America First, small government, pro-small business would eventually fade away. But guess what happened? It didn't fade away. It's actually strengthening. And now both sides are saying, uh-oh, what do we do now? What is the D-Mike Democrat media industrial complex doing, Michael? What's their strategy? You know what their strategy is? To attack, to impugn the integrity of the supporters of the president. When do you guys ever remember? Larkin, you've got so much experience. Tell me when the major press of this country has ever done what they're doing now against the voters. Forget the candidates. That's politics. Against the people who voted. It's a disgrace. Oh, it's a total shame what has happened.
I don't think there's any question. I oftentimes have an argument as a journalism student who never worked in the field with our good friend Bruce Bassett Powell on that very subject. Back in the 60s, the 50s, 60s, 70s, and I do have recollection all the way back to then, you know, they had a respect for elected officials They always had a political opinion, you know, by endorsing different candidates, as far as I can remember, always. But that has always been on the opinion page. And anytime the press takes a position that represents the reporter's opinion, when you see it on television, and I have definite recollection of this, I can't remember the name of the guy in Pittsburgh that used to always give his opinion, but while he was on television during the 30-minute news giving his opinion, the word opinion was flashing on the screen. This is my opinion. This isn't the opinion of KDKA or WTAE. This is my opinion. Now, you pick up the New York Times any day of the week and unfold the front page and take a look at above and below the fold. It is riddled with slanted reporting, riddled with opinions, and it's just not right. And you know this, Rich, the press was founded on who, what, when, where, why. I mean, it was founded on that. And opinions always belonged on the opinion page. And if I wanted to know the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's opinion, I'd turn to the opinion page and I'd usually get it. And they were Democratic in nature in Pittsburgh. They always have been. Well, that's fine. But I'm beside myself with the New York Times, Washington Post. You know, all these newspapers are getting together and they're going to publish this one-day criticism of the president. Who's ever heard of that? Who's ever heard of the press banding together against an elected politician? Who's ever heard of that? When's that ever happened in this country?
Larkin, is there a reason that they're doing it?
Well, correct me, Rich, because I know you must be aware of this. It started with the Boston Globe.
Boston Globe. That's right.
Yeah, and the Post and the Times and Chicago Tribune and
That's right, Larkin. They ask 100-plus newspapers to put in this editorial complaining about Trump.
A full page.
Right. However,
a full page.
As people looked at this and heard about it, they said, why are they complaining about him? Let's also include what happened in the last 15 months in America. Have we been benefiting? Of course, he says things and does things to get attention, and that's the way he does business. But have things changed in this country? For 30 years, we lost tens of millions of jobs, everything imaginable. You walk into a store and pick up any product, any two products, and you will see where they are made. Many of those products were invented in this country. Our workers are mainly employed selling you the product. The people making the product are somewhere else, and they're not just any old kind of product. Many of them are beautifully presented products, beautiful brand names. Why aren't they made in America anymore? And Rich, you said that it's been going on for a long time. You saw it happening in your days in college and all. My big question is to most people who tell me they like the changes that are taking place in America right now is, how long could this have continued, Larkin, if the changes of the last 15 months didn't come about? And the president did some unbelievable work, and I admire that. Of course, he has wild ideas and things like that. That's his opinion. I'm only concerned about what this man is doing for America. And why aren't the House and the Senate members who were paying all their bills, their salary, their per diems and everything else, why aren't they doing more to help support what he's doing? Why don't they introduce their own pieces of legislation to get these programs back in the schools to make sure the trade deals are adequate? Why must it be up to the president? These people were elected from the states to represent us. How are they representing us, Rich?
Well, Michael, let me just say something. We've got primaries coming up. You guys got a primary coming up in a few weeks, don't you? I believe, or has it passed? I think it's coming up.
It's passed.
Okay, just passed. Florida's got it. We're late. Florida's late in the game. And what happens in your state levels, and Larkin's brought this point up so many times so correctly, it's so crucial what goes on in state levels. And so as the middle class has watched itself get more and more squeezed, as families, good parents, right, parents who mean well, they're good parents, but good parents across the country, Michael, especially with young kids, you know, sons and daughters who are my daughter just turned two.
Gabriella, little Andre, Henry's four kids, every one of them is being taken into the new world of technology. How are they going to fare if the teachers in the schools right now aren't getting them ready for being adults 10 and 15 years from now?
This is do or die, Michael.
That's right. There's no monkey business left.
This is not, and look, I'm not of the belief that any president or politician or messiah or is a messiah, is a savior. But most people will either, I guess, agree or disagree with this comment that I'm about to make. But I actually believe, Michael, that this is the United States' last best chance to reverse course, start to directly engage.
Engage is the word. Rich. People want to talk about real bread and butter issues that confront America's families every day.
Don't count on the media, Michael.
Forget about the media. Turn them off. Turn them off and start talking to your neighbors. Call your family members. Have them over for a beer or a coffee. Talk common sense issues. Today, people want facts and figures, and they want to see evidence of what's being done to make things better in America. All these news media people, they call me, I give them some positive answer. I never make it. If I say something negative, I'm on the news. I don't want to say anything negative anymore. The people want bread and butter issues discussed. Henry wants to know what he can do to make sure life is good for his children. I want to make sure that my kids are okay. Their children are going to have to be in the new world, just like your daughter, Isabella. But there's nobody in Washington worried about Isabella or Gabriella or any of the kids. Nobody. Larkin, how many politicians are talking in their run in Florida that they're worried about the youth today, 5, 7, 10 years old? Can you identify even one to me?
Oh, yeah, they all are.
Can talk you deaf, dumb, and blind, but how about facts, figures, and evidence of what they're doing and what they're presenting to make this?
Well, I don't think there's any question that Congress is
out to lunch.
They're irrelevant, is what they are. They're completely irrelevant. They have done nothing, and anybody that's in leadership down there from either side, it's awful. I think this is as appropriate a moment as I can find for me to issue an apology to Rich. I jumped probably a little harder than I should have, obviously a little harder than I should have on you when you brought up Ron DeSantis the last time, who happens to be running for governor in this fine state. And I didn't know a lot about him other than some of the commercials that I'd seen by the opposition, and shame on me for, you know, even listening to it without investigating everything that was said. But Senator Cruz and Representative Ron DeSantis introduced a constitutional amendment this year. Yeah, do you know what it was? Anybody? Either one of them?
Yeah, term limits.
Exactly. I don't know where it stands, but I definitely plan to find out. I'm sure it's been shelved and stuck in committee. But they actually stepped up to limit senators to two terms and representatives to three terms. Well, I think they ought to just change the longevity altogether. I think the president should run for 2 6-year terms. I think senators should run for, and Congress people should run for 2 consecutive 4-year terms. That's just my opinion. But the fact that Ron DeSantis had the basketballs to do something like this, to even introduce the constitutional amendment, makes me think I better go back and take a better look at what he's done.
And, you know, Larkin, you bring up a very good point about this. In today's new world, with all the technology in front of us, why can't we have a scorecard on what the actual candidates or the elected people have done? What legislation have they done? What have they passed?
It exists, Michael.
But is it on one scorecard? I don't find it. I've looked around to see what's been going on in Pennsylvania.
The problem is that all of these organizations are political in nature. The Hoover Institute at Stanford.
But are they available to you and I at the click of a button? No.
Yes.
I don't see them. I can't find them. I ask one of our helpers to check it out for me.
I'll direct you, because I know your political positions. I'll direct you first to a thing called the Judicial Watch, big think tank. Conservative think tank.
But see, the conservative think tank is one thing. What has any given politician done? What have they introduced that's going to be the benefit for the college students, for the workers? Exactly what they have done. What did they, after the introduction, did they follow it through? How many co-sponsors did they have? There's very little of that. What I sent you about Representative Glenn Thompson's legislation, I sent you exactly the timeline of exactly what was going on. You can't find that on all pieces of legislation. You found out when he introduced it, who were the co-sponsors, when it went before the House, when it got to the president's desk. It outlined everything. We don't see that on legislation. And the legislation that's there that's supposed to be helping American workers, I'd like to see exactly who has been doing it and what was the accomplishments and who fought against it. If you're a co-sponsor, that means you're a person who's going to vote for it. If you're not a co-sponsor, then what's the problem?
Oftentimes they don't argue about the specifics. Oftentimes they just kill it in committee, or they refuse to take it to committee, or they read it once and you have to read bills
several times. Right. But at least Larkin, if I knew what those people put on the table for consideration, it would help all of us understand and appreciate them more and want to support them in the future. But what you don't know, like you're mentioning about this bill that was introduced in Florida. Well, that should be well known that people are talking about term limits. I think that people should have a place to go and just put in term limits. See who introduced the bill. Just log on, Google on term limits, who introduced what bill in what state, where it went, why it went nowhere, period.
Michael, we can't get 60% of the citizens in this country to vote. And you want them to get this kind of information, they wouldn't even look at it. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and that's all well and good.
If the 40% that do vote had a chance to look at it, I'd be happy.
Nah, the 40%, that number, 40 or 50%, that's only on presidential years. That's not on off-season voting. Off-season voting in Philadelphia used to be, we used to jump up and down when we get 21%. Nobody cares. You know what? Nobody cares. You know that, and I know that. Everybody's living fat and sassy. They got a roof over their head. When they turn the spigot, they get water. When they plug in the TV, they get electricity. Nobody cares. I'm telling you that.
Okay, people, you're right. And Larkin, that's a wonderful response. what are we going to do to get them to care? Because sooner or later, the sugar daddies are going to go out of the picture. You can only have so many people on government benefits, which are really taxpayer-provided benefits. When they say government benefits, that's a lie. Government has no money except the taxes that it collects. Ask Rich Loges. Rich, how much money, how much profit does the government take in other than taxes?
Yeah, well, the government has nothing, Michael. It gets from it gets from taxpayers.
They're $23 trillion in the hole.
That's right. And who put those pieces of legislation on the table for the president to sign? If I was the president, I'd say, I'm sorry, we can't go into debt funding this particular issue. We don't have the people working in the country. I'm talking about 8, 10, 12 years ago. We were just, the president should have said, I can't allow this piece of legislation to pass with my signature. If you want to put it back in the House and Senate and let it go after 10 days to become law, fine, but it's not going to have my signature. And that's the kind of stuff was not happening in the country. They put on all kinds of regulations that killed our businesses, slaughtered the businesses. Half of those regulations are gone. Guess what? They were never needed. And now the businesses are saying, I can give it a try. I will do it. I don't have to have this and that. I don't have to have bulb 97.15 in every outlet where someone's at a station. It was ridiculous. All kinds of regulations that meant nothing.
Yeah, well, I understand that. We keep on talking in this circle. I don't know how you get Congress people to care about this country, how you turn elected politicians to get them to turn a deaf ear to chances to make money in their position and to make them patriots.
There is one way, Larkin, I can recommend, and I have been doing it for the last 2 years. Turn off the tap. No money. No money.
Once they
get elected on Monday, on Wednesday they're already working on campaigns to be reelected. And that's not what their job should be. The tap should be cut. All these lobbyists and all, I'm sorry, Richard, you may disagree. The lobbyists have had too much influence. They destroyed the country. They overlooked the taxpayers. They overlooked the voters. They overlooked the youth. And now we have what we have. Luckily, whether it was Trump or someone else that came in to do this, we needed this wake-up call, and we got it. And now that we got it, most of the national people are furious because they are being shown that this one person came in as a bull in a corral, and he is making the changes that they should have done for 30 years and making them successfully. Do you agree with that, Larkin?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I do, but it still comes down. I mean, Rich and I have said this. I know Rich has said this. When you have problems, you really need to get down to the foundation, and sometimes even below the foundation. You have to address these things at the ground level. And the problem in this country is you have no issues with getting anybody and everybody to stand there and give their heavily partisan opinion about what's going on. But when you said, have you ever delivered campaign literature? Have you ever knocked on doors? Have you ever worked in a committee? Have you ever jumped? Hell, you can't. That's ridiculous. Those few people, that's got to be 1% of the voting public. You can't even get a positive answer when you ask them, did you vote? No, but I live in a country where my opinion counts. It counts as using up good oxygen is what it counts for if you don't vote.
You know, Larkin, I'm suggesting that all the media use their microphones and their television and their cable capabilities to start uniting the country. We need unifiers. I heard all the opinions about all these people that did this and that. Tell me something that is going to influence me. Encourage me as you encouraged people about Patrice Banks today. She was focused and consistent. She did her best. Tell me about people like Patrice. Don't just tell me this one's no good, that one's no good. This one had tapes. This one had... It's all a waste of brain power. It's all a waste of human capital. Doesn't...
How about Amorosa? And I'm embarrassed to admit that she's a citizen of Jacksonville, Florida. I mean, how irrelevant can you possibly be?
Yeah, and it's over and over and over. It's who's paying for this airtime? And all these protesters coming out to these things. Who's paying for those buses? Who's paying for those hotel rooms? Who's paying for their food and their lodging? I don't want to be paying for that. Who is paying for it?
The networks.
Well,
they are. But if she's going to appear on the Today program, I'll guarantee you they pay the airfare. They pay for her room and board if she has to stay. I mean, no.
But you know what, Larkin, and the bottom line is, before we begin to sign off today, is all that happened will be irrelevant in the next few days. The book will be published. The person will go into the sunset. It's like everything else in the news. Today it's worthy of your thought, your brain power. In 3 days, you forgot about it. The problem we have is we have to keep after the people who were elected to do a job in this country to finally do their job.
I actually, just as an aside for a little bit of humor, had a never-Trumper laugh in my face when he brought up the Space Force, the idea of the Defense Department and Trump and a few other people in the White House that we really need to start investigating a Space Force. It's the only subject they've brought up in the last 7 months where both sides totally agree. Totally agree.
Yeah, well, so outer space is where everything is going now. Today we've saw it with drones and everything else.
They laughed at Kennedy when he invented NASA, so whatever.
Larkin, Rich, thanks for being such an important part of our broadcast. And to our listeners, the best listeners in the world, thank you for stopping me in my travels. I appreciate hearing from you. I do share your thoughts as you hear on the broadcast. And I hope to continue to see you throughout the summer season. We have several festivals coming up, and I'll be talking about them on the Saturday broadcast. Until this Saturday at 11, or next Wednesday at 11, best wishes to you and yours, and have a great, great weekend.
Great week, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.